What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2022, our first live show of the year. We did take a little break. I hope you had enjoyed your holidays. Hope you took a little bit of time off to enjoy and celebrate. I know a lot of people who are very happy that it is no longer 2021. I know I'm also very happy that it is 2022. And I'm looking forward to today's show with all of you. I see loyal listeners, Patty and William, already checking in on the Facebook Live. Glad you guys can join us. It's one of those shows. It's just me and you today. So please feel free to comment in the comment if you're watching the video on our Facebook page, on either the Inspired Thoughts with Sam Facebook page or on the Talk Radio NYC Facebook page. Or if you're just listening, you can always email me at sam@theconsciousconsultant.com. And I see Ann checking in on the Facebook Live, and Patty also saying yes, hopeful for a better year. Yes, yeah, I know it's not starting off so good for a number of people. A number of my friends, I was away for a couple of weeks. I'm actually going to be talking about my trip down to a little known island in the Caribbean by the name of Montserrat. But first, of course, we're going to start with our little section from my book, Everyday Awakening. But we're going to be talking a lot about resilience today. And I really feel like this is a very timely topic because, look, this pandemic's been going on for a while, whether you say it's now an endemic or not, whatever it is, it's an additional stress in our lives. And that stress, whether we're aware of it or not, whether we're conscious of it, whether we think we're feeling it or not, it's there in the background, underlying. And so I thought this was a great topic to start off the new year, because these days it does take resilience just for everyday life. So we're going to get into resilience in a little bit. But first, of course, our section from my book, Everyday Awakening, which, as always, if you have not gotten it yet, you can get it at everydayawakeningbook.com. And please let me know if you did get a copy. If you enjoyed it, feel free to leave a review up on Amazon. Let me know what you think of the book. I'm really interested in people's feedback. So today's section is called Integrity Creates Influence. And influence is golden. Integrity is not just about showing up. Integrity is much more encompassing. It includes our words, our deeds, our actions, and our intentions. First, we can build trust by showing up consistently. Then we can build trust by living up to our words. That's when people look at our deeds and actions to see if they are in alignment with the things we say. Sure, it is easy to find people who say one thing and do something else. Many of them get away with it for quite a long time. Eventually, though, the inconsistent nature of their actions is revealed and people stop believing them. They may never say a word or give any feedback. The lack of integrity turns them away and they feel no compunction to let the person know. Yet a beautiful thing happens when our words and actions are aligned on a consistent basis. People start to trust us on a very deep level. That level of trust gives us real influence, and that influence must be treated as the most precious gift, for it is. It is more precious than gold, for that influence allows us to share our work and ourselves to an enthusiastic community. That community is what will support us for the rest of our days. Where has integrity created more influence for you? In your work, with your family, your friends, do you cherish the influence that your integrity has given you? So this section of the book I wrote really came from my deeper understanding of influence through my association with a wonderful organization. You've heard me mention them several times on the show, the Evolutionary Business Council, which is a community of transformational thought leaders. And I'm very honored and very proud to be a part of this organization. And a lot of the organization, a lot of what it was about when I first joined was all about influence, about how gifting influence builds our influence, how gifting influence to other people who are doing good things raises them up, and then it raises us all up. And I started to learn over time, like really the value of influence. It hadn't really been in my consciousness that much. But influence, I've learned, is really precious. And most people think influence is just about power or money. If you're a boss at work, you have influence. If you're the person signing my paycheck, you have influence over me. But it's so much more than that. Because you may have influence as a boss of what hours I work, over the type of work I do. But if you're out of integrity, if you're not living up to your words, if you're not really living up to the energy and the mission. You know, so often we see corporations who have these wonderful slogans and beautiful sayings, but when you really look at how the company operates, it doesn't really follow those beautiful words. And that gets revealed eventually. Sure, if you have a lot of money, not only can you have a lot of influence, but you can cover things over for a period of time. But eventually, the truth of how we are being, the truth of how that organization is operating in the world is just naturally going to come through. We can't hide who we are. And in some ways, organizations that are very sort of pyramidal in structure. There's a CEO, a chairman of the board, a bunch of VPs, middle managers, and then frontline people. It all comes from the top. And the example that the people at the top set, and this is true of any organization, doesn't have to be a for-profit organization. It could be a nonprofit organization. It could be a religious organization. It could be a spiritual movement. The integrity of that person flows down to the organization. And it takes a very conscious person to step outside of that and say, oh, I see everybody else is being like this, but I'm not going to be like that. And the reason why I say it takes a very conscious person to make that choice is because when it starts flowing down and everybody around you is acting the same way, it's hard not to fall in line. That peer pressure. We're naturally social animals. So that way of being is going to influence us. Now, if we stand in our integrity while everyone else is out of integrity, we can influence them. But it's about being truly aligned, really being aware, being centered, and knowing what are our values, what are our standards. And, you know, I saw this movie over the weekend on Netflix called Don't Look Up. And it was a really eye-opening, it was a wonderful movie about, it was really a critique of the way society is today. And while the story is about a comet approaching the Earth and sort of the political and the media reaction to it, you can apply the story of the movie to anything, to climate change, to the pandemic, to any social movement, anything. And it really showed sort of how common it is in today's world to be out of integrity, to say one thing, but to be totally different. And in the end, it doesn't serve anybody. It doesn't serve ourselves. It doesn't serve other people. It doesn't serve the world at large. And I believe in my heart of hearts that people are waking up to that more and more. Now, yes, while people are waking up to it, it does seem that there are plenty of people out there, plenty of people with influence who are totally out of integrity. And I'm not sure that's necessarily anything new. Perhaps it's a little more extreme than we've seen in the past, just because technology allows us this leverage that we never had before, so things seem more extreme. But I also feel like the more we understand what it means to be in integrity, the more we know what feels right, the easier it is to see when someone isn't that way, and the more it doesn't resonate, and we just recognize it that much more. So I believe that it's more an awakening of consciousness that we're just more sensitive to people being out of integrity. And so it's worth considering and looking at, who do you believe in the world today? Who has influence? And of those people who have influence, who do you feel really has integrity and who doesn't? And how do those people who you think don't have integrity, how do they act compared to the people you feel do have integrity? And what's that difference? And what can we learn from that? How can we learn to be more in integrity, more in our words? There's that old expression, and anyone who's out there who's a parent, I think will totally get this. Your children will follow what you do, not what you say. We all like to believe that if we tell our children, hey, you know, this is the right way to do things, this is the way you should be, but we're being totally opposite, they're not going to listen to our words. They're going to model our behavior. And that's where real integrity comes in. Our behavior, not just our words, but our behavior, our energy. And sometimes I see people are a little bit too fanatical around, oh, I got to live up to my word. It's got to be exact to what I say. I have to do exactly that. But life happens. That's not realistic. That's not being a human being. Now, yes, you do want to live up to your words on a normal day-to-day basis, but sometimes something happens. Sometimes we make a commitment, we can't live up to it. It's not always about living up to our word 100%. Maybe it's like 80%. But it's about that 20% that we don't live up to. Do we clean it up afterwards? Do we acknowledge it? Do we own it? Do we say, hey, look, I messed up. I own it. This is what I can do about it. I apologize. I am a human being. I am working towards doing better. that recognition is also what brings us into integrity, by owning when we're out of integrity. Sometimes that creates more influence than anything else. So look, I'm not saying people have to be perfect. I'm not saying we have to completely follow our word every moment of every day for the rest of our lives. But it's about our energy. People can feel it. Do we mean what we say when the moment we say it? And maybe something happens and we can't quite live up to it, and that can be okay, but do we clean it up afterwards? That's owning our integrity. So I hope this gives you something to think about over the next week. Think about integrity in your own life. How much are you in integrity yourself? And are you saying yes when you really mean no? And are you saying no when you really mean yes? And are you making promises that maybe you didn't consider enough before you make that promise? And maybe if we just take a little bit of extra time and step back and be a little kinder and gentler to ourselves, maybe those promises we wouldn't make if we really gave it a little more thought. So I would love for you, my loyal listeners, to just ponder that for the next week or so. In what way can you live up to more of what you're really about? And maybe it's about making less promises, not making more. Maybe it's about not being so black and white with what we say. And maybe it's about recognizing our own humanity and making room for that in our lives. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for indulging me with this. I see William on the Facebook Live says he felt the same way about the movie. Thought it applies to our lives today. Yes, absolutely, William. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you a story. I'm going to tell you a little bit about an interesting little Caribbean island by the name of Montserrat. And I spent, 11 days there, ostensibly for a vacation. It wasn't as much of a vacation as I would have liked, but I'll explain what happened a little bit, and I don't want to get too much into my story. I really want to tell the story of Montserrat itself, of the people of Montserrat, and how that relates to resilience. And I have a whole bunch of practices and things I'm going to intertwine in this. A wonderful group of people I had a meeting with yesterday, and I asked them, what is resilience for them? What do they do to help them to be resilient? So I'm going to work that into it as well. So everybody, please stay tuned. You're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, except for the last 2 weeks of the year when I take off, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern time, right here on talkradio.nyc and all over Facebook via our Facebook Live. And we will be right back after these messages.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you on edge? Hey, we live in challenging, edgy times, so let's lean in. I'm Sandra Bargeman, the host of The Edge of Every Day, which airs each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live with me and my friends and colleagues as we share stories and perspectives about pushing boundaries and exploring our rough edges. That's The Edge of Every Day on Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Thank you all for tuning in today. I hope that today will serve you, that today's show will touch something to help you a little bit. I want to tell you about this little island in the Caribbean known as Montserrat. It's spelled M-O-N-T-S-E-R-R-A-T. And, you know, typically at the end of the year, my wife and I, we close down our businesses the last 2 weeks of the year. We go away on vacation, typically to someplace warm, not always. And, you know, given everything with COVID, we were trying to be careful to see, you know, to go someplace where things were relatively under control. And my wife happened to stumble upon the Department of State, the U.S. Department of State website, where they ranked a bunch of countries by, like, you know, what level they are at, like level four being like really bad, level one being really good. And we originally think of going someplace else in Central America, and it turned out not such a good place to go at this time. And they were looking around, and we saw that there was this one island listed, Montserrat, as level one, that the COVID rates were really low. And so we started to research into it, and we found that Montserrat was kind of known as an old world style Caribbean island, that it wasn't built up, it wasn't very commercialized, and that kind of appealed to us. You know, the pictures all made it look absolutely beautiful. And so we decided to go there, and we should have done a little bit more research before we booked our tickets, because we booked our tickets and then we found out that even though we were fully vaccinated, that we still had to be in quarantine for 5 days. And also that, you know, there were no direct flights to Montserrat. From New York, you have to fly down to Antigua, and from Antigua, you take a small plane over to Montserrat's, like a 20-minute flight on this little plane. I loved it. It was like 6-passenger little plane that takes off. It's like 25 miles east of Antigua. And it was beautiful. But once we got there and we started talking to people, and you know, my wife and I, we're the kinds of people that when we go and visit a place, we don't like doing the touristy stuff. We don't stay in resorts. We like talking to people. We like walking around. We like really getting to know a place. And so I learned a few things about Montserrat. It was a small island in the Caribbean, and it had been inhabited by indigenous cultures, the Taínos, you know, centuries ago, probably, you know, 1500 years ago. But at the time that the Columbus came, and when the European settlers finally came in the early 1600s, it was actually deserted. There was no one there, although there were indications that there were prior cultures. And so it became known as a lot of Irish settlers came. It became known as the Emerald Isle of the Caribbean, kind of after island. It was Columbus actually named it Montserrat after a monastery near Barcelona in Spain. And actually, when you look up Montserrat, lots of times you'll see pictures of this big monastery in Spain. That's the Spanish monastery, not the island of Montserrat. But the significance of Montserrat and of the people that we came to learn is, first of all, there is a volcano. There's an active volcano. And if anyone's a friend of mine, if anyone looks at my personal feed, you'll see I posted a bunch of pictures when I was down there of the volcano. It's not active, but there's still kind of a lot of steam coming off the mountain. And actually created a whole new mountain, because in 95, it first started to erupt. And the scientists thought it was going to be a little further south, like that's where the active area was, but it actually went a little, not a lot, it's still in the south, a little further north. In between these two mountains, it created a whole new mountain, but it didn't just erupt in 95, and the eruption in 95 was relatively minor. It kept erupting in 96. In 97, a big eruption, and that big eruption, the lava literally destroyed the capital city of Plymouth. And I saw pictures of Plymouth, actually saw them online. You could probably still see them. It was a thriving capital. It was the center of life. It's in the southern part of the island. And luckily, very few people died. The population of Montserrat at the time was probably over 13,000. They said somewhere between 13 and 14,000. But the lava destroyed the whole capital. And people had to evacuate. It's a British overseas territory, which means Britain actually owns the island. And they use the Eastern Caribbean dollar, which several islands in the eastern part of the Caribbean use. And so a lot of people left when that happened. But if they didn't, and not necessarily all right away, because the volcano actually kept erupting, over not just 97, 98, 99, it actually kept erupting up until about the year 2010. So for close to 15 years, this volcano kept erupting. So for many years, people were living in shelters. They were living in crowded, very unwell conditions. And then Britain offered a package. They paid people money to leave, and many people moved to Britain, to England, to Canada, to other places, wherever they could. And the population actually shrunk down to about 3,000 people on the island. And mostly this is people who lived in the north, who lived in areas that were not affected by the volcano. And there's this whole exclusion zones. There are several zones in the island. And you can actually take a tour and you can go into Plymouth, but you have to get a special permit. You have to check with the police. We didn't do that. We actually did a little tour that took us to Richmond Hill, which is close to Plymouth. And we were able to go in and this famous hotel, the Montserrat Springs Hotel. And you know, it was abandoned, covered in ash. The guide also took us to this other building that was close by that had been condominiums, very nice apartments. And you could see how people left, and they probably just took what they could carry with them. And there was still stuff left there, and how things got destroyed by the lava, and really firsthand got to see the destruction. And while I've seen pictures like this, I've been in areas before that have been destroyed by war and by other things, it was really my first time to actually go inside a building that was affected by the volcano. And so it really kind of hit home to us, like how much the people of the country must have gone through at the time. And we heard stories about how you'd have to get up on the roof of your building and you would have to shovel and sweep the ash off of the roof of your building. And they were wearing masks all the time, because otherwise you'd breathe in the ash and cause all kinds of lung problems. And we learned all about the volcano. I'll talk a little bit more about that after the break. But then I also learned, I forgot that in 1989, just 5 years before, there had been this huge hurricane that came through the Caribbean, Hugo. And Hugo did massive destruction. And Montserrat was directly in its path. And they said when Hugo came through, actually something like 94, 95% of the buildings lost their roofs. And that George Martin, the famous producer of the Beatles, he actually had a studio, Air Studios, in Montserrat. And many famous musicians had come down and would record in his studio, not just the Beatles and Paul McCartney, Eric Clapton, the Rolling Stones. I mean, just all kinds. Almost every famous band of the late 70s, early 80s had been down there recording. And now that was gone. And the people of Montserrat survived that. And they'd just been rebuilding. Like, things were just coming back, and it was just starting to thrive in 95, you know, about 5-6 years afterwards. And then the volcano exploded. So when we come back, I'm going to talk about sort of what happened since 95, 97, and what I saw in the people of Montserrat, of what they were like today, and what I believed, how resilient they are, and what helped to make them so resilient. And so I hope maybe this story, maybe some of these lessons can help us in being more resilient today. So you're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. This is our first new live show for 2022, and we will be right back after these messages.
Howdy, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. Thank you all for tuning in today. I hope what I've been talking about, the story of Montserrat and of the resilience of the people, I hope it inspires you in some way. So I've been talking about sort of the tragedies that Montserrat had suffered. But the interesting thing was, when you talk to the people, you didn't find any bitterness in their voice. You didn't find any regret. The people who stayed, and now, you know, as I mentioned, the population went from like 13,000 down to 3,000. Now the population is maybe about 4,000, 4,500 with people who've come back. But the people are happy there. The people actually are relatively joyful. And when I looked at, like, what were the characteristics? What are people like in Montserrat? Number one, they're very connected to their community. They're very connected to each other. Everybody knows each other. 3,000 people, it's a small, 4,000 people, it's a small community. You know, I think about it. I live in this giant apartment building that's got, you know, 400 units in it. That's part of this complex. It's got three other buildings that have 400 units, 1600 units. We've probably got close to 3000 people just in our four buildings. But how many of my neighbors do I know? I know a few, but not very many at all. But in Montserrat, I mean, you could not go anywhere without people knowing everyone else. And the importance they placed on community and their connection, it could be seen in very subtle ways. And one of the things that struck me, and I didn't quite catch it until close to the end of the trip, was how people thought of places, like places you would stay, a bed and breakfast, or a hotel, or an event or something. They didn't think about it by the name of the place. They thought about it by the name of the person who owns it, because everybody knows who owns everything. So, for instance, we asked our cab driver to take us to this restaurant, Summer Breeze. He said, okay, we're going to Benny's place. I go, no, not Benny's place, Summer Breeze. He goes, oh, yeah, Benny owns Summer Breeze. And then I got it, because then I realized, like, people thought about the first place we stayed. Oh, that was a Clover and David's place. The second place we stayed, oh, that's Gary's place. So people think about things by the name of the person who owns it or runs it, not by the name it was given. And that, to me, it's very subtle, but it's so insightful about how the people are. That when we're really connected with community and really connected with people, we don't think of things in terms of the name. Like, the equivalent would be, you know, like I run talkradio.nyc. So people would talk about, oh, that's Sam's internet radio station. They wouldn't call it Talk Radio NYC. They'd say, oh, that's Sam's internet radio station. So that really shows how people think of things. And that connection to community, I think, really gave people the resilience to stay with the island. And we would ask people, like, why did you stay? Like, things got so bad. I just can't imagine. Can you imagine that there's ash coming out of this volcano every day, even if you're in the north end of the island, the volcano's all the way in the south, and you have to shovel the ash off the roof of your building so it doesn't collapse? I just can't imagine that, living through that. But they did. But the interesting thing was, they didn't take it personally. They didn't feel like, oh, the volcano was doing something to me, or, oh, you know, the volcano is trying to take something away from me. No, it was just a natural part of life. Yes, it was challenging. Yes, it was difficult. But they didn't really take it personally. And what I noticed was also, and it was interesting, because I also met a number of people. Not a lot. When I say a number of people, it was like four or five, but who lived in mostly in Europe, mostly in England or Ireland, who would come to Montserrat every year for the last dozen years or more, and they would spend a month or 2 months or 3 months or 4 months during the wintertime down in Montserrat. There's this one couple I met on the beach, and I was talking to them, and they had had a house on the far side of Plymouth, didn't get destroyed from the volcano, but the access to it was cut off, and now they could get there, but there's no services, there's no nothing. They still own it, but it's like, doesn't mean anything because you can't use it. They ended up staying, coming back. They bought another house in Montserrat, and they would come every year from like December until March for the last 13, 14 years. And I'm just thinking, like, wow, like, you kept coming back even after you basically lost your house. I mean, not that it's destroyed, but you've lost the use of your house, and you came back and you bought another house, and you still keep coming back. And I asked, and I wondered, like, why would you do that? And they just, even though they weren't from the island, they felt such a connection to the place. They felt a connection to the beauty. They felt a connection to the nature, the peace. And many people I talk to, and it's kind of the same reason why me and my wife went down there, was to get away from the hustle and bustle of day-to-day life here. I mean, we live in the middle of New York City. It's always something to do. We always feel like we have to do something. I'm on the computer. I'm on my phone all the time. I mean, down there, no, it was just going to the beach, just talking to people, eating, you know, making a meal, eating out, and just enjoying it. There's a certain peace to the island. And so I found that people down there were actually very grateful. Like, many of them have traveled to other islands. Many of them have been to Europe or the United States, so they know what it's like elsewhere. But they love it down there. They're grateful for what they have down there. And so that gratitude, I feel, really keeps them grounded in what they have around them. And of course, there's trauma. Of course, people had different, challenges that they had to deal with. You know, there were many people we met that they're either their brothers or sisters or their other extended family had moved out of Montserrat, but they stayed. And lots of times they just felt they didn't have anywhere to go. They felt at that point in life they didn't want to start over and that they wouldn't find what they had there anywhere else. And I could kind of see that. You know, given that the island is a relatively isolated island, it's difficult to get to. It doesn't have a deep bay, so you don't have big cruise ships coming in. So if you're going there, it's a little bit of an adventure to get there. So you really have to want to go there. And I feel all of that, that sense of gratitude for what they did have, that sense of community, that not taking things personally and being grateful what they have, like all of that helped the people to be resilient. And actually, the resilience, it doesn't just stop with the volcano, what everyone lost. Things were just coming back. I talked to many people and it's like the just like 2018, 2019, people started to come back. They started to get a few more visitors. Workers were coming in, rebuilding infrastructure. You know, they still actually don't have an official capital. But people started coming back and they were expecting 2020 to be like the best year ever. I mean, think about it. Hurricane Hugo destroys most of the buildings. They build back. Then the volcano explodes a few years later and destroys their capital, and most of the people leave and destroys just even their way of life for the most part for several years. Again, the volcano erupts 95, the big one 97, keeps erupting for another 10 years, 13, 14, 15 years. Finally, it's settled down. Like, finally, things are calm. Takes a little while to build it back up. And then suddenly COVID hits. Suddenly there's a pandemic and they close their borders because they don't have a tremendous medical infrastructure. They couldn't afford for people to really get sick with COVID. And so when we were checking out like the stats of like, you know, how many people got infected out of the island, out of the 3,000 to 4,000, 4,500 people over the course of this entire pandemic, 44 people caught COVID. And obviously it had to have come from tourists or people visiting or people coming back from other places. But out of those 44 people, 42 recovered. One person left the island, might have been a tourist or might have been just a temporary resident, and one person passed. And interestingly, the one person who passed was something like 99 or 100 or 101. I don't know. I heard a few different things about how old she was. And one person said, yeah, I don't think she really passed from COVID. It was probably more from other conditions just because of her age. But I thought about it. And it's like, first of all, it's a very low percentage because they're very careful. And they actually closed their borders in 2020. And then they just reopened them. I believe it was in September or October of 2021. They just started to let people in who were non-residents. And they've been very, very careful. So even if you were vaccinated, you still needed to go through a 5-day quarantine, and you got a PCR test, after about 4 days. And then if it came back negative, then the fifth day they would release you. So they were being very careful, and they don't do the PCR test the way we do the PCR test now in the United States. They do it like the old way, like they go all the way back up. It's a little bit uncomfortable because they just couldn't afford it. So they're very careful. Now, they didn't take COVID personally. They didn't take this pandemic. They weren't mad at the Department of Health for doing this. They're still cheerful people. They may not have much there. You know, it's not a wealthy island because there's not a lot of industry. There's not a lot of tourism. They used to export sugar from sugarcane and other fruits, but, you know, pretty much they have to bring in stuff. And I got to talk about the supermarkets. I got to take a break, but when I come back, I'm going to talk about my experience going to a Montserrat supermarket compared to a United States supermarket and someone else's comment about it. But they don't have much. But you know what? Sometimes I think not having much makes us a little more free to actually enjoy life. That sometimes when we're so caught up in our material possessions and so caught up in what we own, that we don't really value what we have. So I'm going to come back. I'll talk maybe a little bit more about this idea of resilience. Thank you for all the hearts on the Facebook Live. Thank you for tuning in. And I see Anne, one of my new loyal listeners, said, this reminds her of the fires that in her area in Southern Oregon last year, now in Boulder, that are now happening. And it's been incredible to see the devastation. People are there to help those in need. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how when there's a lot of natural disasters, people really come together to help each other. So anyway, resilience. We're talking about resilience. I'm going to talk to you about my own experience with resilience when we come back after these messages. So you're listening to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on talkradio.nyc, all over Facebook. And we will be right back in just a moment.
Join us every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Eastern for The Mind Behind Leadership, where we focus on what leadership really means to us and to others. We have practical discussions with the CEOs of some of the world's largest companies, owners of small businesses, and experts in psychology and behavior to get that inside track, what to do, what to avoid, and what really happens. Join me, Graham Dobbin, at the new time, 4 p.m. every Tuesday for The Mind Behind Leadership, here live on talkradio.nyc.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Calling all pet lovers.
Pet Avengers, assemble!
On the Professionals and Animal Lovers show, we believe the bond between animal lovers is incredibly strong. It mirrors that bond between pets and their owners. Through this program, we come together to learn, educate, and advocate.
Join us live every Wednesday at 2 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
And welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, our first show of 2022. I hope you've been enjoying it, talking about resilience, talking about my trip to Montserrat and what I learned from the people there. And I mentioned just before the break how about the supermarkets. And it's interesting about the supermarkets, because when you're a small island like that and most things get shipped in, almost just about everything, you have to wait until the ship arrives, until that freighter ship that brings the cargo container of all the stuff you've ordered. And if something happens, the ship is late or it doesn't show up, then you don't have stuff. And so we went into the supermarket, and when we were warned ahead of time, so we kind of expected it, that there's not a lot of choices. It's not like the supermarkets here in the United States, where you've got 15 kinds of apples and hundreds of cereal boxes and everything else. You go into the supermarket there, and it's more like in New York, I would say it's more the equivalent of like one of the little bodegas, one of the little delis, and how much food they have. And one of the residents had said that when they go to a supermarket in the United States, it's like going to Disneyland. There's so much stuff and it's so colorful. And oh, my God. And even my wife, who comes from China, when she first came, you know, China is much more developed now. It's very different. The supermarkets there, it's a real lesson in you know, you don't need a lot of stuff. I mean, would we have liked to have a few more choices when we went shopping? Because we had to cook several meals. Because one of the things we didn't realize was, first of all, we knew we had to cook some meals because we were in quarantine for 5 days, although we were able to order out and people delivered a couple of times. But what we didn't realize is we were coming out of quarantine the day before Christmas Eve. And Christmas this year was a Saturday. And they also celebrate Boxer Day, which is on Sunday. And because Christmas and Boxer was on a Saturday and Sunday, Monday and Tuesday was also a holiday. So a lot of places were closed for 4 days when we came out of quarantine. So Christmas Day, like nothing was open. So luckily we were able to find a supermarket that was open on Christmas Eve. And we bought a bunch of stuff and cooked at home, cooked at our B&B where we stayed. So, you know, we really have a lot of stuff that we take for granted. And there they don't have that much, but they're grateful for what they do have. And it's so interesting just to see how, you know, and some parts of the island, some people have a little more money and other parts have less money. And we didn't rent a car. Like everyone was like, oh, did you rent a car? You know, oh, if you want to rent a car, we can arrange it for you. And I didn't really want to rent a car. Number one, because they drive on what I consider the wrong side of the street, the left side of the street, not the right side of the street, because it's a British territory. It's not American. And I'm used to driving on the right side of the road. And then when I got there and I saw what the roads are like, I mean, this is a volcanic island. Everything is up and down and curving and up and down and curving. I mean, you could not walk out of your house without walking uphill or downhill. I mean, you were hiking the moment you walked out of your door. And so I just was like, I don't know if I want to, for the first time in my life, drive on the left side of the road in this kind of a situation. So we said, you know what? Not going to rent a car. We'll just pay a cab driver. And you know what? For the cost of the cab driver picking us up, taking someplace, and then picking us up the place and taking us back to where we were staying, it was roughly the same price as for per day as renting a car. And I didn't have to pay for gas or insurance or anything else. So it worked out pretty good. And in general, we usually just used a cab twice a day to go where we're going and to come back. And some days only once, because we'd walk back. And we walked a lot because we're New Yorkers. We love to walk. We walk all over the city. But it was a little bit not quite what we expected, because it's not that developed, because it is more old world Caribbean. So the first thing that happened that was not very pleasant was when we were at the first B&B we were at, again, we didn't have to stay in our room. We were in quarantine, but we could walk around the property, and they just mowed the grass. And we walked up one place, there's a little cemetery top, and we walked another place and walked another place. And I got all these bites. And at first I thought they were from the ants, because the ants all over the place, they're vicious. But then it started to spread, and with certain parts of my body, very uncomfortable, very, very itchy. And we talked to them, and they go, "Oh, those are chiggers. You must have caught them from walking around the property." And it very uncomfortable, and they spread all over my body. The host was wonderful. She gave me some allergy medicine to help with the itching, some cream for it. But it made it very unpleasant for me personally, just physically. Then we moved to the new place, and you know, we go around, and then we have challenges around Christmas, around finding places that are open, being able to do stuff. Now, keep in mind, my wife and I, we haven't been on vacation in 2 years. Like, this was the first like trip to just relax. We haven't been traveling because of COVID. This was supposed to be our getaway to relax and enjoy ourselves. And there were plenty of times. And then on the day after Christmas, we went to this a cafe, had waffles, and asked about walking around there. And they said, "Oh, there's a hiking trail near here." So we go on the hiking trail and we walk up, beautiful views at the top of the trail. Again, it's like straight up. It's like you're just constantly climbing. So it was a bit of a exercise, a bit of a hike. But then we decide, instead of going back after we reach the lookout point, the overview point, we decide to just continue, see where it's going. And so we're going down, down, down. And I kind of realized that, you know, we had gone to the north to this cafe and we're heading more towards the south. So we're getting closer to where we live. And so down, 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 we decide to go. And I'm an experienced hiker. I've hiked before. And then the trail was pretty clear and relatively marked. But then it started to get not so clear, not so marked. Started to get a little nervous. And then we came to a part of the trail where it was washed out. And then it was kind of a little tough to figure out which way do we go. Started to follow the riverbed. Turned out after a while, it wasn't the right one. Came back up. I tried to climb up the other side because I was pretty sure it was across the way. I slipped and fell, scraped my leg. It was bleeding. It was awful. You know, then we decided to go down the riverbed, came back up again, found an easier way across, and then found the trail and walked home. And by the time I got home, my leg was killing me. It's all bloody. And you know, we just wanted to relax. And then the next night, we go out to get something to eat. We walk back, very pleasant evening. And then we had done laundry and we brought it up and put it up on the roof of the building. And then all of a sudden, notice there's all these bugs all over the place, gnats. And then I go down and I see where I turned on the outdoor lights of the place we were staying, then the whole wall covered in gnats. And then we go inside and there are gnats everywhere. And we're not talking like a dozen gnats. We're talking like hundreds, thousands of them. And we're like, "Oh my God," and trying to get in touch with the host and couldn't get in touch with them. And it was just ridiculous. It was just like one thing after another, after another. And I was exhausted. I just couldn't even deal with it. The host was very nice. He let us stay in a different room that night. And he lit torches when he got there, and it was only for one night. I mean, people in the island, it was like no big deal. I'd never experienced anything like that. I've never seen an invasion of gnats that was so extreme. But in the island, they're used to it. They've had it before. Oh, yeah, that happens now and then. They just burst and then they die. They only live a short time and they're over with. So by the time we were ready to come back, we were pretty ready to come back. We fly back to Antigua. We're in Antigua waiting for our flight. We had a big gap between. We get on the plane. Plane's a little bit delayed, not a big deal. And then our plane arrives in New York, but it's a little bit late. And because it's a little bit late, we don't have a gate. And so we're stuck in the plane for an hour. Just like, what an end to what an adventure. Look, was the whole thing like that? No. I mean, the beaches were beautiful. We practically had a beach to ourselves. I mean, the island was beautiful. But, you know, when you're looking to just get away and relax, and then you have all these trials and tribulations, it takes a bit of resilience to deal with that. And so for me, dealing with the challenges, I just had to be very present. I just had to focus on what I did enjoy. I just had to focus on the fact that I was getting through it, that it was only a limited amount of time, that we were coming home. So yeah, this whole trip was about resilience, which is why today's show was all about resilience. So I've talked a lot. I've tried to weave in some resilience practices, some keys I see towards resilience. I would love to hear from you. What helps you to be resilient? What kind of things do you find? And I think it's very relevant to what's going on in the world today, what we're all experiencing with the pandemic. We all need more resilience. We all are going through a challenging time, but you know what? Sometimes looking at the contrast, looking at what other people have gone through, which is so much worse maybe than what we're personally going through, to me, that also helps me to be resilient. It also helps me to say, you know what? It might be challenging, might be difficult, but it's not as bad as other people. Anyway, that's my show for this week. I'm over time. Thank you all for tuning in. I so appreciate you all. If you enjoyed the show, please share the video. If you're watching the video on Facebook, share it with your friends. If you missed any part of today's show, you can always find the recording posted on the website later today or tomorrow on talkradio.nyc. And of course, we're posted in all of the podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, all over the place. If you listen to podcasts anywhere, you can find the Conscious Consultant Hour. So thank you all for tuning in. Next week, I got an amazing guest lined up for you. I hope you enjoy next week's show, and I hope you'll join us then. Thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget, later today, 5 o'clock, it's Frank Harrison with a show, Frank About Health. We've got all our Friday block of shows from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then we do it all next week, starting on Mondays at 7 p.m. with Sandra Bargeman and her show, The Edge of Every Day. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll talk to you next week.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Informed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7.
Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.